From the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
Welcome to this Friday, November 15th edition of the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here. Thank you for tuning in on 89.3 FM, or perhaps you're listening on the internet at WHFR.FM. Either way, we're so glad you're here. The WHFR Journal is designed and has for many years been involved in sort of bridging the information gap between things that we learn about both in our campus community and our community at large, and you, our listeners. And we're so glad that you're here to learn, to become more knowledgeable on particular subjects, and then to help spread the word, as well as hopefully be entertained, pique your interest, and so on. And our first interview today really speaks to that concept of sharing information, ways to learn more, then hopefully opportunities for you to spread the word and make the world a better, safer, and more empowered place. So an organization that if you've been listening for a long time, you know, is near and dear to my heart, and that is the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. We are going to feature a discussion with Senior Manager of Education and Outreach, Shannon Ward, today, new to our WHFR airwaves, but not new to the cause of epilepsy awareness. Shannon, we welcome you, and we say happy National Epilepsy Awareness Month here in November.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's an honor to be here with you today, and I'm just excited to celebrate with our community this month. There's a lot to be celebrated.
Yeah, there sure is. And oftentimes when we have awareness experiences like this, I know that it's not necessarily saying, woo, everything is great in the world and we're just happy about everything. It really is that awareness component and that kind of a check-in to say, this is where we're at, this is how far we've come, this is where we're headed. And we need our community to help, right? To help make things even stronger and even better. I can't think of a more appropriate organization than the Epilepsy Foundation to showcase some of the many things that your organization does to support this cause and fight for a cure for epilepsy ultimately. I have some personal stories. You have personal stories, many listeners perhaps do, and I think that speaks to the specificity, statistically speaking, of how many people are impacted by epilepsy in one form or another. Can you start off by sharing a little bit about that for us?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, when it comes to prevalence, the numbers are really astounding. If you're a numbers person like me, numbers really can get to me. In Michigan alone, there's nearly 109,000 people living with active epilepsy. That's a large number if you think about that. And across the United States, we have approximately 3.4 million people with active epilepsy. So that's meaning they've been diagnosed and are receiving treatment for that. And then if you think about those numbers, there's about 500,000 people or teenagers and younger, or 17 years and younger, who also have active epilepsy. Epilepsy affects 1 in 26 people in a lifetime. So if you think about that and to put that into perspective, you think about your average classroom size, right? Your average classroom size, if you think about one student in every classroom across America or even just across Michigan, those numbers are really big. And that is why we do this work. That is why we're in this journey together. And then also on top of epilepsy specifically, seizures. Seizures can happen outside of epilepsy, right? And 1 in 10 people worldwide will experience a seizure at some point in their lifetime. So we're here to support those who have active epilepsy, who's also experienced a seizure in their lifetime. Because these numbers are so prevalent.
1 in 10 people having a seizure. That's hardcore. I mean, that's pretty really intense. Is. And 1 in 26 potentially developing epilepsy in their lifetime. We're a world, particularly a nation, that wants to point a finger and say, that's what's causing it. That's the problem. That's the situation. Doesn't work that way with epilepsy, does it?
No, it doesn't. And that's been part of my personal journey as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sometimes takes years for a person to really understand what's happening because it's not just as simple, you can do a test to find out if you have epilepsy. There's many different stages to that journey. And part of our hope is that as we connect with folks, we're able to get them to the right resources, to the right testing, to the right physicians, quicker and quicker. So that way we can see more results, you know, whether that be, you know, seizure freedom or maybe just epilepsy management, that type of thing.
When you talked about the statistics of about 108,000, 109,000 people living in Michigan with epilepsy currently, you know, the word that stands out to me is living with epilepsy currently. Mm-hmm. So this is something that, depending on the circumstances, depending on all the different, you know, I guess, triggers and so on, you can live with. And in many cases, you can live with very successfully and have a normal life and all of those things that one would expect out of a life, especially for a young person or teenager. But I can't imagine, and I certainly even know from experience, that that's just not an easy thing to do. So understanding of what is going on when someone is living, walking around, living with epilepsy, so that should there be a situation where they are having a seizure or an aura or, you know, being triggered with something, so we as the community can do the right thing and help, mm-hmm. and certainly lend empathy and understanding. So what are some things that in your role as, you know, managing the education and the outreach of this organization, where do we begin with that? How do we educate and inform a community to say, this is what might be going on, this is what you should look for, this is what we're dealing with?
Yeah. So that's a really great question. And also, to go back to those numbers, these are statistics. These actually statistics are a little bit older from the CDC. And so we know that a lot of people go undiagnosed for years. So those numbers are predicted to be much higher than that. So when it comes to how do we even start, right? Where do we even go from here? You know, there's a lot of different places. But one thing I would just encourage is, you know, most people know how to do the Heimlich maneuver. Most people know what an AED is, you know, that type of thing. But simple seizure first aid is really all that we need. We need to be open and willing to help somebody and know the steps to help them. And seizure first aid is actually fairly simple if you know what you're looking for. I think the tricky part is epilepsy presents in so many different ways. There's over 30 different seizure types. So with that, you know, a person may appear to be having a seizure, but it could also appear as something else. And that's often a question when we're doing training. Somebody will say to me, you know, I'm listening to this training and goodness, some of the things that you're telling me happen during seizures, maybe I have epilepsy, right? And, you know, to be quite honest, we have had people walk away from our trainings saying that, oh, goodness, I think I need to see a physician, which, you know what, is great, that because maybe they have a little bit more knowledge, they're able to pursue that and find out for sure. But I think education is just really the most important thing that we can do is be aware of. And seizure first aid starts off very simple. We like to say that it's three S's. That's an easy way to remember that. Stay safe inside are the three S's. And I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit more, but I'm happy to do so.
I think this is a perfect time to do it. Yes, thank you.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So when it comes to epilepsy, we're going to remember those three S's. So stay with the person. You're going to want to stay with the person. Try to remain calm and keep those around you calm as well. We want to make sure that we time a seizure. The reason we're timing a seizure is because we know that anything over 5 minutes, that's a general rule of thumb. Anything over 5 minutes could become, you know, an emergency, and we may need to call for assistance or medical assistance. So we want to stay with the person and make sure that they're safe, right? And then as far as the second S is safe. So depending on the situation, you can think about, you know, maybe a person's just sitting there having a seizure quietly because there's different types of seizures. Sometimes those are unseen. You might want to just stay with the person. But if somebody were to have a seizure where they became unconscious or fell, you need to make sure their surroundings are safe depending on where they are. You know, if they're out in a driveway or in a parking lot, it might look different from if they're sitting on their couch at home. So we want to keep the person safe as much as possible. And then side, we talk about side being if a person becomes either unconscious or unable to communicate, we're going to want to turn that person on their side. So they may have went from a standing to a sitting or to a laying position. We're going to turn them on their side. And the reason being is we want to make sure that their airway stays open. We want to make sure that, you know, their swallowing is not impaired, that type of thing. So we want to turn them on their side until the end of that seizure. And again, going back to that 5 minute rule, we want to call EMS if that seizure lasts over 5 minutes.
OK, I think the first instinct when someone sees an active seizure is, well, panic, of course, and then not knowing what it's sort of that fight, flight, or freeze mentality. So you kind of freeze because you don't want to make it worse. Yes. And then I know I've talked to other people that have said, well, I just try to hold them and to hug them and to stop them because they're this violent potential shaking. And that's, again, a very active seizure. That's not the technical term for it, but that's what I would call it. Probably not. I didn't hear stop the person from moving in any of your SSS, right? So,
yes,
so that's correct. A misconception. And tell us about any others that we may be
facing. Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions. One of those is putting something in somebody's mouth. Every time I do a training, I hear about somebody saying, well, my family member, Uncle Bob, has this wooden spoon that anytime he has a seizure, we put that in his mouth. The truth of that is the reasoning, I guess, should be they believe it's going to stop them from swallowing their tongue. The truth is a person cannot swallow their tongue. It's simply impossible. Now, a person may bite their tongue during a seizure, and that's okay, but we want to make sure we're not causing any other harm. So we're never going to put anything in somebody's mouth during a seizure. Some other misconceptions, depending on the age with children, of course, we just came out of a pandemic. You know, is this something I can catch? Epilepsy is not contagious. But there's just a lot of different misconceptions. And depending on, where you live geographically, different religion types, there's different misconceptions about, stigma. This is where stigma comes in. And this is one of the things that we're working really hard to do is break down that stigma. I was recently speaking to a population, and I was so surprised by the amount of people in the room who actually said that they actually have epilepsy or a family member of theirs has epilepsy, and they never talk about it outside of the family. It's simply because there's a lot of stigma and misunderstanding, right? And that's, that's a disservice. They need to get the care that they deserve. They also need to be accepted for who they are and all their differences, right? So that's just another way that we can look at that. The other misconceptions, some people believe that you can't get harmed by a seizure. That isn't true. We do know that death can be a result of seizures if not cared for properly. That's why we do a lot of training on making sure, people with active epilepsy are seeing their physician and getting the care that they need, as well as making sure they're compliant with their medications. That's something that's a little bit tricky because if you think about it, truth be told, how many of us have actually been prescribed a antibiotic? And how many of us actually finish that antibiotic, right? Unfortunately, that is the hard truth. And sometimes it's easy to not be as compliant with medications. And we know that if we manage the epilepsy, it's going to provide a safer atmosphere and environment for the person living with epilepsy. There's a lot of misconceptions around that. And we're working as the foundation to break down that stigma and to bring awareness to the hard truths. Some of those truths are hard, right? But a person with epilepsy has the potential to live a beautiful life, right? And many of them do if they're getting the proper treatment, and they also have community around them. And I think that's one of the big things too. Community is really important.
And that's something that the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan does so well. Reminding you, our listener, thank you for being here on the WHFR Journal this Friday. We are talking with Shannon Wade, who is the Senior Manager of Education and Outreach for the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. We are honoring those that help and support and fight for this cause of ending epilepsy in this world today through the month of November, National Epilepsy Awareness Month, and also for those that are going through it as persons with epilepsy. And then the other part of that is those that have lost someone through this just horrible and awful situation. I have to go back. I'm always fascinated to learn new things. And the fact that stigma still exists, Shannon, kind of blows my mind. We think about things like witches being burned at the stake 100 years ago, and now we look at that and it's like, oh my gosh. Yeah. because they were different, or somebody did have a medical condition or something, they thought that they were possessed by the devil or who knows what. And I think about the disrespect. Nobody, you know, did anything wrong to get this awful diagnosis, but they have to live with it and live through it. So the fact that they have to live through that aspect of it is very upsetting to hear. So thank you for being aware of that, bringing that to light, even in this interview. And, you know, if you're listening and you're thinking, oh, those people are just bad, or that's a demon or something. Oh, come on. You know, this is the 21st century. This is a medical condition. Yes. and not something to judge, because yeah, you may feel that way until somebody that you know or love, or you yourself is diagnosed with this or starts having seizures. So boy, that's hardcore. I feel like the concept of helping people that are going through a new diagnosis is critically important. And I sense a very big part of what your organization does so very well. I have personal experience again with sharing. I as a teacher, I see students and some of them present symptoms, and ultimately it comes across that they are having seizures and then ultimately potentially diagnosed with epilepsy. But without that community or that ability to say, we know some experts, and both medical and sort of sociological, psychological, to help bring the best of the best together, to not just be like, oh, it's all going to be okay, but to really literally look at the heart, those hard truths, as you kind of call them, that early detection. And it, as soon as you can get on that course, that path, I think it's going to just make this journey so much easier. So speak to that a little bit, if you will, and what is kind of what's set in place through the foundation to help someone that's newly dealing with this, and not just them, but certainly their own family or community.
Yeah, absolutely. And this too is, you know, a personal journey of mine, as well as I have a daughter who's living with epilepsy. You know, one of the things that I found in our journey, my daughter was much older in high school when we found out that the foundation even existed. And to be quite frank, we knew the foundation existed, but we didn't know it was a place for us. You hear about foundations, right? And you don't realize exactly what that is, what that looks like. You know, is that something for those who maybe have, you know, an epilepsy syndrome that has multiple facets to it, or just the general, yes, I'm having seizures and medication is controlling it, but really we're here for everybody. We are that front door to living with epilepsy. We like to help people get to the appropriate care. Appropriate care is so important. So often after a person's diagnosed, whether that be in the ER, or maybe they've seen their primary care physician receive this diagnosis, before they even get into a specialist, they're on Google, right? And they're Googling away, what can I do? So we have a Here For You helpline, and that helpline takes so many calls every single year. I think in the last month, we've taken a few hundred calls, just, you know, of community members reaching out saying, hey, I need some assistance, some guidance, and some on some services and supports. And so I think, you know, if I receive a call from maybe a parent of that has a child with epilepsy, or a young adult, that type of thing, part of it is just listening. I think one of the biggest things is when you're first diagnosed, or a caregiver first receives this news, there's just so many unknowns, and you just need to be able to hash out those conversations, to have somebody hear you and relate back to you what you're saying. And one of the things we do is, as we're in those conversations, we're taking notes, of course. And after the conversation, we're going to send you some follow-up information. That way, when the time is right, when your mind is ready to absorb that information, right? Because if we go to a doctor's appointment and they give us all this new information, it's overwhelming, and we're often going to forget that, right? But one thing we can also do is help them guide them towards the right care, but also give them questions to ask when they are able to see that specialist. And I think that's really important. And sometimes just, you know, being that person who can come, especially understanding, if you call the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan, anybody who answers our helpline has personal connection in history with epilepsy. And I think that's really important, because I know as a person who received a diagnosis for their daughter, my family tried everything they could to understand. But until you've lived that experience, sometimes you just can't understand. You want to, right? You want to understand and give all the practical knowledge, but I think we've all heard it said, oh, my dog has epilepsy, or my, somebody we know in the family has epilepsy. And it's not quite the same because remember, I talked about how many different types of epilepsy there are. So being able to be there as that, center of support, I think is going to just be really important. So if you do have listeners calling, you are not alone in this. We want to support you in this. Our team truly just wants to walk alongside of you until you get to where you need to be and then support you and cheer you on after that.
And that walk alongside of you is sometimes metaphorical, but sometimes literal as well.
Really,
So
really.
many wonderful ways to connect as a larger community again, and again, being a having a family member that has suffered through epilepsy, very, very close. I remember and feel all that range of emotions and know that having a sense of community, literally, yeah, it may not be exactly the same, but you get it. You get where I'm coming from, and to be able to come together to sort of celebrate those that are doing wonderful things and are living successfully with this awful diagnosis, but also sometimes hugging and crying, and sharing that too if need be. But what I'm literally referring to is the wonderful A stroll for epilepsy events, and those are very important to me and my family, and I know so many other people that are very connected to those, and that's only one of the outreach opportunities that people have through the foundation of Michigan here. And you do more than one stroll, multiples of
I
those. So
do,
tell us a little bit about those, and I can't underscore the power and the range of emotion, but also just that feeling of love and community with
Yeah,
those.
absolutely. So the first time somebody may call us, we may not give them all the information about our resources and programs because that's a lot of information. But as we walk that journey together, we're going to share with them different, programs and resources that we have available to them. One of those being our Stroll for Epilepsy. While this is a fundraising event, this is also an event where people feel so empowered. They gather their community, they gather their coworkers and family and friends, and they come out to one of our stroll locations. This current summer in 2025, we're going to have four different locations taking place throughout the state. We'll have one in Traverse City, we'll have one in Midland, in Grand Rapids, as well as in Detroit. And during those events, what you can expect is a whole lot of emotion, a whole lot of beauty, and a whole lot of support. It feels like the biggest pep rally. If you remember being a pep rally in high school, it feels like the biggest pep rally because you're going to meet others who are walking the same journey as you. You're going to get to meet our sponsors and our exhibitors and the people who are really there doing the work in the trenches alongside of you and fighting for the things that you need. And then also you're going to hear from an inspirational speaker during that event. We're going to also take a moment to honor those we've lost to epilepsy. And we're going to hear from others who are impacted by this journey. And so I can't imagine one of the first things I've ever seen was the Stroll for Epilepsy. And I actually signed up, it's been over 10 years ago, to go to it. My daughter ended up having a seizure the morning of, so we didn't go. And if I would have found the foundation sooner, my life would have been completely changed. And we never followed up from there, that type of thing. And I wish I would have, because this is just an event where everybody rallies together and supports a beautiful cause and beautiful humans. So that's one of many, many different things we offer. We also offer our Call and Connect groups, which are basically virtual support groups. Those support groups, they discuss all kinds of things. They discuss daily needs, raise questions, and offer community care. These groups, I can't tell you enough beautiful things that have come out of these. I had the honor of running the parent support group for many, many years. And again, I'll say it a thousand times. This is the group of moms or parents that I wish I would have had from day one because they become family. They do this work together and you learn from them because of all these different experiences, right? And all these parents or caregivers or people living with epilepsy have different experiences, different knowledges, whether that is education-wise or trade-wise, Sometimes we have teachers in those. Sometimes we have special education, folks in those. But sometimes we have legal teams in those, right? So we just take this robust community and give them an opportunity to connect and be together. So we have an adult call and connect group. We have a teen call and connect group. We have a parent and caregiver call and connect group. And we have an older folks call and connect group that is also happening. So a lot going on there. In addition to that, we have so many different services. We do a lot of advocacy. That's one thing we feel very honored to do alongside of families. If families are having issues with employment, job support, that type of thing. We walk alongside of them, work with their employer, and kind of teach about ADA law and what's expected and what rights are. Additionally, that also happens in the schools. We're quite often part of IEP conversation, helping people get set up with their individualized learning plans in school and supporting those efforts as well. And I could continue going on and on, but I will give you a moment to ask whatever you might.
Oh no, you're just Shannon, this is just a joy to receive this information. So important and so powerful. We can have all of the best events and websites and awareness campaigns and so on, but it is literally that spreading the word and the hope and the goal that one person listening, preferably 10, 20, or 1,000, will say, wow, yeah, I know somebody. I'm going to share this organization, or I'm on this journey, but I'm alone on this journey. And I could benefit from this, or I just want to be better at it because I have a nephew or a family member or friend, a neighbor, that has epilepsy, and I want to understand more, be more prepared, et cetera. So let me remind our wonderful WHFR listeners that we are speaking this afternoon with Shannon Wade, and Shannon is with the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan, and she is Senior Manager of Education and Outreach. In case you couldn't tell, she knows her stuff here. But Shannon, really, I mean, we really could go on and on about the events. It's not only the strolls, but just the recent Toasting Hope event, which is always a wonderful. I just absolutely love going to that event and participating. The Golf Classic, the Turkey Trot, and then all of the different things that go on during even Epilepsy Awareness Month, the different training sessions and so on that you really can get access to ongoing. And so we want to make sure that our listeners know that. So I'd like to just briefly give the website epilepsymichigan.org. Epilepsymichigan.org. That's the place that has all of this stuff, and it's a great place to start. Shannon, if somebody wanted to reach out and call
Yes.
That support line, would you share what that is as well, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Our Here For You helpline. You can reach us at 800-377-6226, and a member of our team would be happy to connect with you and help guide you, whether it be through our web page or maybe you just have simple questions. And this is a number for anybody who loves somebody with epilepsy, cares for somebody, just wants to learn more, has a epilepsy diagnosis. This is a number that is definitely available to you, and we'd be honored to take that call.
Thank you. We kind of started talking a little bit about the numbers, right? And I don't, as neither of us are doctors, we don't want to get into the medical aspect of this. You mentioned different types of seizures, different types of medications, and there's other forms of therapy and as extreme as surgery, brain surgery, all the way to just monitoring and watching symptoms and so on. Is there a is there a trend? Are we seeing anything different on that sort of on that treatment side of things? Obviously, a lot of the fundraising goes into research, which is
Yes.
critically important. And I don't expect that there's necessarily breakthroughs left and right, but is the, are we just plugging along, trying to continue to do everything that's being done, or is there a trend or a thing without necessarily, again, getting into the
Sure.
heavy medical side?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And one of the places we really focus on this is we do an innovation conference. It's Epilepsy Innovation Conference in Grand Rapids. And we bring in experts to talk about what's coming down that pipeline, right? I will say this. This is such a growing field, and there is a lot more research to be done. But we are pushing for that. And there's research in a lot of different ways, whether that's medication treatment, surgical treatments and options, early access options. And there is work being done. And we are seeing more and more medications come to the market, right? But we're also seeing more of that multidisciplinary approach where we have teams who not only look at the epilepsy specific, but figure out, is this genetic? Is this something that, maybe, speaking with a social worker or maybe, a psychiatrist or counselor, maybe that would be, appropriate. So there is so much movement, and I'm just very pleased that we are continuing to move forward. We haven't gotten to a point where I know some other conditions have, where funding's not available, that type of thing. We continue to work really hard for that funding. We continue to advocate. We'll be, we actually are going to be taking a teen to Washington, D.C. for Teen Speak Up, and we're going to be advocating again for CDC funding and assistance towards some of these efforts. So that's really exciting, but there's more coming down the pipeline, and that's just really exciting.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And speaking of support, we know that this organization is not a team of one. It is a team of several. Could always be a team of more. We recognize that as well. You all are such hard workers. And we are Brianna Romines, who has been president of the foundation for a long time, has moved on to something else as of right, also with the organization at the national level. And we have our wonderful Andrea, who is now president, stepped in. So we're excited and grateful for that. But we also have the board of directors, right? That is a part of sort of this process, and so many wonderful team members. And every person that I've ever met that has been connected in some way to this cause has that fire in their eyes, that sparkle, and that incredible sense of passion. And I think you kind of have to be able to kind of keep moving forward, and you have to keep that positivity, that open mind, and that hope. I mean, again, we call it toasting hope for a reason. It's because
Yeah,
there is
exactly.
hope and there is progress, right? So that's an amazing thing to focus on while still doing all of the hard work.
And one thing I'd add to that too is anytime a person comes in for a tour of our office or just to talk with somebody on our staff, it is so neat to see them because you'll hear down the hall, just about their experience. And they always leave saying, I just felt so supported. I feel this joy and I feel this hope. I think hope goes so far, right? Hope is something that we need to long for and hold on to. And that's really exciting. One of the things that helps that happen, though, is our advocates and our volunteers. Our volunteers are incredible. Every year, I mean, goodness, we do a camp for students with epilepsy. We do a family camp. Those types of things, they don't just happen with, a team of eight, right? Those happen because we have volunteers who are willing to give up their own personal time and come and do a lot of training so that way they have the education and knowledge they need, but they can care for, individuals at such a level. And we have a pretty high expectation when we're trusting our kiddos, right, with another person. So we go through a lot of training, and we, in addition to that, we have support of our board, but also our professional advisory board, and that consists of health professionals throughout the state who do this work. And we have, they're always in our back pocket. We have them to rely on and depend on, as well as, the support of our board. So we really have an amazing organization. I couldn't be more honored, to work here and do this work alongside of each of them.
Thank you for that. We are honoring again all of these people that Shannon just referred to as we shine a light on awareness of epilepsy during Epilepsy Awareness Month. If you see people wearing some extra purple this month, you know that it's hopefully you know that it's related to epilepsy awareness. That is the color. There's a hashtag too. What's that? Do you
So
know
there's
it?
actually a few of them out
Oh,
there.
okay.
So
Go ahead.
here it seems like we get a new one, right, through our national organization. Sometimes Share Your Purple Power was one from last year. Epilepsy Michigan is one. National Epilepsy Awareness Month Michigan is also another one. So there's several of them out there. If you just go to your browser or start typing, I promise you'll find some of them. But one thing that you can do to share that information also is to tag Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan and your social media, when you share your story, if you become seizure first aid certified, you get a digital copy of your certification. Share that on your story. Share that with people. And I promise people will become interested and sometimes ask you, well, why did you do that? My favorite is when we have people show up to these classes and trainings who don't know anybody with epilepsy. They just come because they want to be a good human who support people, because if those are statistics are right, likely they're going to become, you know, connected with somebody at some point, and they want to be prepared, which is so beautiful. So yeah, there's a lot of opportunities, especially speaking to National Epilepsy Awareness Month. One of those things being, and I think we mentioned it a little bit, is our Turkey Trot for a Cause. This happens on Thanksgiving morning in Canton, Michigan. You can still sign up if you'd like to. This is a great cause. I think there's about 1,500 folks who go to Canton. And this can all be done right before your Thanksgiving meal. So you'll be home in time to make sure that turkey's prepped, that type of thing. We just recently had our Wellness and Epilepsy Conference. This is the premier event for the epilepsy community in Michigan, the biggest conference for those with epilepsy. It was a highly successful event where we heard from a lot of different folks and experts. But also, it's a simple way of getting your community involved is just to have conversations and see who might like to do some sort of you know, support project, whether that be a small fundraiser event, or maybe that means asking your library if they would do a community event. Could they do a seizure first aid training? That's how it happens, is because of our community. It's somebody introduces somebody else to, you know, us, that type of thing. And that's really how we've seen this progression in outreach and movement. So it's really exciting. So yeah, honor those who are living with epilepsy and join that fight with them. I just would encourage that, because I tell you what, when a person feels seen and appreciated, and they know that you know how to care for them, that makes the difference, all the difference in the world.
Thank you. Very well put, Shannon. And also learning through information and research from your website, but also some awareness that I've picked up along the way here as well. Epilepsy doesn't see color or race or age or body shape or, you know, preference, you know, gender identity. None of that matters with epilepsy, right? Oh. I mean, it's one of those that none of that, nobody's immune, I guess. Let's put it that way.
That's so true. Yeah. And I think that, again, is just the reason we need to talk about this more and break down some of that stigma, right? Yeah. Because nobody is. We often hear, oh, nobody in my family would ever have epilepsy, you know, that type of thing. Or, you know, and again, so many people go misdiagnosed or undiagnosed for so long that it's a real eye opener when you realize that maybe it is epilepsy. So, yeah. I appreciate all that work.
Yeah, good. And one thing, most important thing I think we've learned is that should you have any interest, or even if you just want to, as you said, be a better human and share positive, you know, positive things with your community, it's checking out the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan and utilizing these resources in some way. They're here for you. They're here for me. They're here for all of us. As, again, a person who has a family member who actually died from epilepsy, sadly, but his legacy lives on through our connection to this organization and doing everything we can, both professionally as well as personally, to support this cause. We want to make sure that that these voices are heard and that this information is being utilized. So we thank you so much for your time today, Shannon, and really wish you and your daughter and your family just all the best of everything. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of family gatherings around this holiday season, right? With Thanksgiving around the corner and other holidays and so on. An interesting time to maybe float. Hey, I heard an interview about the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. Maybe we do a group training, or maybe we participate in a walk, or go to something or something. I think that could be a really cool first step for some people that have just hadn't considered being involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Skip the politics, go right to seizure first aid. Yeah, I think that would be a great opportunity. And I'll tell you, I think this is the perfect time of year, right, to have these conversations, because we're talking about gratitude a lot, right? And we're grateful for our friends and family who are in our communities, and why not bring them into that journey with you? So thank you again for letting me be here with you today, and I appreciate that.
Very well put, Shannon. Thank you so much. Again, Shannon Ward, Senior Manager of Education and Outreach for the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. For more information, epilepsymichigan.org, or that phone number, 800-377-6226. Do check out the information that is available out there. You are not alone, nor should you be when dealing with something like this. So we have more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. Please do stay with us.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Thanks for staying with us here on the WHFR Journal. In this next segment, we will wrap up the show with a topic called Anxiety Tech, Gadgets to Chill You Out. This is from the Public Radio Exchange and an organization called the Story Exchange. So yeah, we're talking about anxiety tech. And frankly, if you are feeling a little anxious but don't have time to meditate or take a yoga class, and we know anxiety is on the rise, especially among women, what can you do about it? Well, there's some new technology that exists. Interestingly, all of the companies that we're going to hear from have women founders. So we are not here to endorse or promote any of these organizations, but we think it's kind of interesting to explore this topic of anxiety tech. So we'll let this program wrap up our show today. We thank you for tuning in. Susan McGraw here on WHFR Dearborn, and enjoy the show.
We all experience anxiety, whether it's mild symptoms, racing heartbeat, sweating, maybe dizziness.
Or something a lot more serious, panic attacks, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Anxiety runs in a spectrum.
That's the former president of the Anxiety and Depression Association of America.
Luana Mahkis. I'm associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School.
Like many in the field, she's seen an influx of patients since the pandemic.
So the World Health Organization, the CDC, they all reported a jump. And early on in the pandemic, it made a lot of sense. The world was anxious.
The COVID-19 pandemic triggered a massive 25% rise in anxiety and depression around the globe, especially among women. Here's a new mom talking to CBS News.
And one of the hardest things for me was just the isolation and the loneliness.
And while that jump has come down, it's still lingering.
It's not your imagination.
I've seen it globally, and I've seen it in my practice. There's a lot more people coming in where you should say to me, you know, I was a little anxious before, but now I'm paralyzed. Anxiety is too much.
Something interesting that Dr. Luana has noticed is that some people, young and old, are anxious because they're reassessing their lives.
There's this value shift that I've seen in the pandemic that people have were forced to pause and be like, what matters most? And then we have all of these individuals trying to figure out what do they do next in their life. And with that comes uncertainty and some degree of anxiety, I think.
And what's more, if you ever felt like you were the only person who felt anxiety, you probably don't now.
The list of famous people talking about mental health grows longer by the day.
Ryan Reynolds, Sophie Turner, Megan Thee Stallion wrote an entire song about anxiety. I'm a bad bitch and I
got bad anxiety. Selena Gomez released a documentary about her mental health struggles called My Mind and Me.
I am grateful to be alive.
And let's not forget Prince Harry, of course, and Meghan Markle, who are practically taking down the British monarchy over its failure to address mental health.
They knew how bad it was. They thought, why couldn't she just deal with it? As if to say, well, you know, everybody else has dealt with it. Why can't she deal with it?
Here's Dr. Luana again.
Mental health has become a conversation that we now can have. So is it that the anxiety really increased significantly? Or is it that now we have celebrities and important people saying, listen, I'm anxious too. And so I think there's a lot more people willing to say anxiety is taking a toll on my life.
And that's actually a good thing.
I think it's a fantastic thing because we know how to treat anxiety. And so if we're talking about it, at least we can identify and do something about it instead of just being paralyzed in silence about it.
Enter the startups. Since the pandemic, money has flowed into mental health tech startups. $5.5 billion just in 2021 alone.
There are already big players you might recognize, like Calm and Headspace, which offer guided meditations, and voices so soothing you might just fall asleep. I quite like Headspace founder Andy Puddicombe. Here he is in a Himalayan forest.
So as you breathe in, just imagining you're breathing in that fresh mountain air. As you breathe out, just letting go of any tension in the body.
Lovely. There's also any number of online platforms for talk therapy. The big names there include Talkspace or BetterHelp, and they've got their celebrity endorsements. Here's Michael Phelps, the Olympic swimmer.
Therapy can dramatically change your life. It helped me a lot, so you should try it for yourself. Brought to you by Talkspace, therapy for all.
But now, the latest entrants, and this is what we'll focus on for this podcast, are the makers of physical products that use design and sometimes even robotics to tackle anxiety.
You mean something you can actually hold in your hand?
Exactly. Or strap on your head in the case of a VR headset. But let's start with something you can hold in your hand.
My name is Stephanie Bruce, like Bruce Springsteen, which is similar.
I will remember that. Okay, good. Like many of us, Stephanie sometimes has trouble sleeping.
She uses the meditation apps.
And I really like using them. But still, when you're very anxious or stressed or panicked or worried, you do not always want to grab your phone and open an app and start tapping on stuff.
One night while laying awake, Stephanie came up with an idea for deep relaxation.
I had to think of a mom having a baby on her chest and cradling the baby. And the mom is breathing in a certain way, and the baby actually feels this and connects with this and mimics this.
Stephanie has a PhD in pharmaceutical sciences.
She enlisted the help of her brother, Michael.
My brother is actually very handy and technical.
And the two invented a device called Moonbird.
We have one right here in the studio with us. It's very sleek, and it sort of expands and contracts in your hand.
And it's pretty quiet, but we'll hold it up to the microphone so you can hear it working.
We came up with the idea of developing a tool that breathes for you, and you don't have to think or count or listen or look at an app. You just have to feel this and breathe along with it.
They spent a year developing the product in Belgium.
The first 250 Moonbirds, my brother and myself assembled on the attic of our parents. It were the weeks before Christmas.
That was back in 2020.
Are you finding that people are very receptive to this idea? I guess, who is buying and who is using these?
On average, we see that 70% of our customers are women.
70%, you said?
70, yes.
70%, mm-hmm. Yep, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, exactly.
A 2021 study by the University of Chicago Medicine found that women during the start of the pandemic experienced alarmingly high rates of mental health problems, including depression and anxiety.
We mostly target on women because we see that they have these issues a bit more. So I'm still very, very pleasantly surprised that we still reach the men as well and that they're not too afraid of buying the product.
Stephanie says most customers use the Moonbird for stress or sleeping problems. When she herself uses it, she estimates that she falls asleep within 6 minutes.
I think 5 seconds breathing in, 5 seconds breathing out, which works really well for me.
Can you tell me a little bit about how many you've sold?
We've sold over 10,000 devices.
Oh, wow.
And the device is not inexpensive either. It's $199, but it reflects some trends in consumer behavior. A number of studies show that affluent customers in particular are using wearables or apps to track their health or vitals.
That's a good segue to talk about another device we have here.
Yes, this is a little different than the Moonbird. So I have in the studio here something called the Apollo Neuroscience Wearable.
It looks sort of like an Apple Watch.
Right. You can wear it around your wrist or around your ankle, although I think it looks a bit like a court-ordered monitor when you do that.
I actually have mine right now on my clip, which I can attach to my bra, which I do all the time.
That's Catherine Fantauzi.
And I'm the CEO and co-founder of Apollo Neuroscience.
And so with this wearable, it's connected via an app, and you can pick a setting, say, fall asleep or recover, and it will start subtly vibrating.
Like zapping you?
No, you can feel it, but it's not that noticeable. I'll let Catherine explain.
It's barely perceptible. It's essentially white noise for your body. You're supposed to be able to drive a car, work, go to sleep, do whatever you want to do while the program's running.
Catherine developed the wearable with her husband, Dr. David Rabin, a neuroscientist who studied chronic stress at University of Pittsburgh.
The concept is based on touch therapy.
Our sense of touch is our fastest pathway to safety in the brain. And if you think about a baby crying, baby cries, you pick the baby up, you rock the baby stops crying. In its brain, it goes, my needs are being met.
And so the Apollo wearable, whether it's on your wrist or ankle, is designed to soothe you in that same way. Say, for example, you're feeling anxious or stressed at work.
They send these waves of vibration to your body that mimic what happens naturally when you deep breathe. And so you feel it on your skin, but your brain goes, hey, I'm safe. This email isn't going to kill me.
By the way, it's interesting how both of these women used babies and holding babies as a way to explain the technology.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, too. As Catherine says,
we are all big babies.
And not only that, but we're big babies living in a state of overdrive all the time, thanks in large part to technology.
We're all freaking out and we're wondering, why am I stressed out? Why can't I sleep? Well, I mean, it's not normal. We collectively take more pictures in 2 minutes than anyone took in 1950. Like, we absorb more news in the first 15 minutes of being awake than anyone in 1950 absorbed in a week.
So, Colleen, you've been wearing this device for a while. What do you think about it?
Yeah, they sent me one to try for this story, and I'm not getting compensated in any way to say this, but I actually do like it a lot. In fact, I find it kind of addictive. Something that really appeals to me, and I think any busy mom who is juggling work and life will relate to this. I don't have time to meditate or take a yoga class, but I can easily put a vibrating wearable on my wrist and then go about my day or turn it on before I fall asleep.
So that's the big selling point for this device.
Yes, for me and many others. Catherine says about 100,000 people use the Apollo.
I will never tell someone not to meditate or not to do wellness practice, right? Like, you should. But in the end, a lot of us are very busy. And so the idea behind Apollo is that you can get the benefits of meditation without having to meditate.
It almost sounds too good to be true. Do you feel less stressed? Does it actually help you sleep better?
I really think it might. At least it's another tool in the toolbox for me. Apollo says scientific research validates its claims.
We did a trial at the University of Pittsburgh where we showed that non-meditators with an Apollo on, when compared to meditators without an Apollo, the non-meditators' brainwave states caught up to the meditators in about 10 minutes.
And in yet another study,
in a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled crossover trial,
they gave people a task to complete in a very limited time, and those without an Apollo wearable,
nothing happened that we didn't expect. People start sweat, their heart rate goes up, they can't focus, and their performance goes way down.
But for those wearing the Apollo device,
people's biometrics of stress went down. Their heart rate slowed to a normal level.
And the list goes on. Now, not everyone likes it. There are plenty of detractors out there, people who reviewed the device and said it didn't do what it promised or that it was too pricey. It's about $400. But bottom line, investors seem to like it. The company has raised $22 million to date.
Wow. Well, I haven't tried it myself, but I have to admit I have a healthy amount of skepticism.
Fair enough. Well, when we come back, we'll tell you about one more startup in the anxiety tech space.
And it's trippy, literally.
We'll be right back.
The Story Exchange is an award-winning nonprofit media platform that elevates women's voices and achievements. Our $25,000 Women in Science incentive prize supports female scientists addressing climate change. Find out more at thestoryexchange.org.
Welcome back. We've been talking about anxiety tech.
All the new gadgets that promise to chill you out.
So last year, I went to the Collision Conference in Toronto, where I learned about this unusual startup.
Welcome to Trip.
The best way to describe it is software that mimics a psychedelic experience.
Bringing attention to the experience unfolding around you.
Sounds a little out there, right?
Right. But some big names are backing it, including the electronics giant LG, which actually named it a finalist in its Mission of the Future program.
So to view the software, you need to put on a virtual reality headset?
That's right. And when you do, you're literally taken to another world that's sort of pulsating and beautiful. At least that's what I understand. I wasn't actually able to try this one as I don't have a VR headset. But here's founder Nanea Reeves.
Instead of telling you to inhale and exhale, we actually show you your breath like stardust coming in and out of your mouth and make you feel like you're floating to another dimension.
Okay, so we're not looking at a waterfall or a beach, which I would have assumed.
No, apparently your classic meditation scenes don't translate well into virtual reality.
I found some research out of UCLA where they had highlighted that in the absence of different sensory inputs, like all of us know what a beach should feel like on the skin, what it should smell like when we're there. In the absence of that, there's this sensory dissonance that kind of gives you a, there's something wrong with this environment.
That led her to some other research that looks at
how to use virtual environments to trigger states of awe and wonder. Let's give you experiences that are native to VR that you cannot have in this world.
Like shimmering trees and glowing planets.
We found that psychedelic informed experiences like fractals and geometry had a calming effect on people in these virtual environments.
Nanea has a deep background in the gaming and mobile app industries and was an early investor in Oculus headsets. And she's brought that all to Trip,
which has raised $26 million to date.
Is there anything you can tell me about your traction, your track record?
I think we're very close to 7 million sessions in VR. So it's not insignificant. One thing I will say, we are in a major technology evolution. If you look at in the late 90s, computing was on the desk. And then in 2000, computing started to move to mobile. The same thing is going to happen with computing moving from the hand to the head. It is well underway. I would say we're around 3 to 5 years away from a major shift.
So I guess we'll all be walking around with VR headsets on.
Well, I'm not sure we'll be completely immersed in the metaverse, but to Nanea's point, we may very well be seeing more and more mindfulness and who knows, perhaps even talk therapy delivered via VR.
Our goal is to get presence in this category of mindfulness on every meaningful new device and really look at it from an approach of layered reality. So when you need to go deep into full immersion, you can do that and connect to self, but also connect to others in these community environments. So we think of it more like an ecosystem, but spatial computing is going to drive a huge amount of innovation in the world.
And of course, Nanea and all of the startup founders we talk to say that technology should not replace prescription drugs or in-person therapy. But there are some really promising innovations out there.
It's a whole new world. We thank all the women who talked with us about anxiety tech.
And we thank you for listening.
This has been The Story Exchange. Join us next time to hear more stories about innovative and inspirational women doing the things you'd never dream of. Or maybe you would.
If you like this podcast, please share on social media or post a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show. And visit our website at thestoryexchange.org, where you'll find news, videos, and tips for entrepreneurial women. And we'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line at info@thestoryexchange.org or find us on Facebook. I'm Colleen DeBase. Sound editing provided by Nusha Balian. Production coordinator is Noelle Flago. Our mixer is Pat Donahue from String and Can. Executive producers are Sue Williams and Victoria Wong. Recorded at Cutting Room Studios in New York City.
A powerful threat calls for a greater response.
When there's a battle, bring strength.
When there's a problem, seek answers.
When there is doubt, give hope.
Not tomorrow.
Not in a few years.
But right now.
Some battles must be faced together. Cancer fighters stand up to cancer every day. And you can be part of this battle too.
Visit standuptocancer.org to learn more.
Together, we can save lives.
Listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. We are WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
Rest your eyes. Exercise your imagination.
Join us for Sunday Night Mysteries at 9 o'clock. Everything from Suspense, The Mysterious Traveler, Lights Out, and many detective shows, your Sunday night on WHFR's Sunday Night Mystery Extravaganza. 9 p.m. until midnight on 89.3 WHFR.
The station making waves.
That's why my baby stays.